Blog Talk Radio.
Once in a lifetime, does a great author set the stage for a wonderful trip into the minds and lives of their characters. Yvonne Mason doesn't just write books, she crafts experiences. Best-selling true crime fiction author Yvonne Mason will leave you on the edge of your seat and checking behind every corner for the weirdos that only real life can breed. Find her books on Amazon.com. Make sure you check out such titles like Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option, The Pink Canary, and Silent Scream today.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Off the Chain, and I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And yes, that was a piece of shameless promotion. But am I ashamed of it? Nope. That was my
friend. That was a sexy piece of promotion. I got to interrupt you. That was a sexy piece of promotion. I like that.
Well, thank you. That was my friend Victor Aurelius, and he has his own radio show, but he sure does know how to run one of my ads. I'm going to tell you what. Tonight, in this cold tundra that I'm in down in South Florida, if you can believe it, I think the wind is below zero, it feels like out there. Tonight, I have my friend, horror author Frank Bittiger, is joining me again. And over the centuries, he has experienced many existences, and in this incarnation, he's decided he is a veteran who lives and writes in historic Western Maryland. He shares his home with a menagerie of pets, several alternate personalities, and the occasional ghost. This is a man after my own heart. One of his favorite pastimes is taking walks in old cemeteries in the evening. I think, Frank, in another lifetime, you and I must have been best buds or brother and sister are somehow related.
I have a feeling it's somewhere in the gaslit days of Victorian England. I picture us walking through the cemetery. I do. I can see that.
I can too, because we like the same. We should do a book together.
We should. Well, I told you, me, you, and Tom last time I was on. That
yes, you did. and it just. All right, I'm making a note. Do a collaborate with Frank. See what y'all find out on this show, ladies and gentlemen. Anything is possible. You hear anything and all things on this show, because we're off the chain. So, my friend, what have you been up to in the past few months since you were last here?
I have been working, coming home, taking care of the animals, cleaning the litter boxes. The normal exotic, extravagant lifestyle, you know, that I lead. Yeah, that's about it. It's I like mundane. I don't think I would trade it for anything. I don't like change.
Well, see, but mundane, when I do mundane, I get in trouble because I get bored easily.
I'm too busy to be bored.
Things happen. Well, but see, when I get mundane and bored, you know, that alternate personality of mine that comes, she hasn't been out in a while. You know, Miss Layla? Yeah, she hasn't been out in a while. It's probably time for her to come out.
She needs to come out and have some fun.
She does. She does. She's been in way too long.
I've actually been looking for more ghost stories. You know, I love my English ghost story books. So
yeah.
I found an awesome series. She has books out. She's an English writer. Her name is Sarah Rain, and she has, I'm reading number two now, but I have all six. It's an Oxford professor and his maybe girlfriend, Nell, who is an antique dealer, and they get mixed up in the stories of these old English manor houses, you know, the kind that are haunted and have a history, and they're pretty cool. I like them. So I've been reading a lot. I'll try.
I just had a thought, and if I don't say it to you now, I'll forget about it by the time we get off the air, because you and I talked before the show how we get things on our mind, and then if we don't write them down, or we sort of lose the thought and it goes into the netherworld. You know, I just finished The Mad Hatter, and I left a particular character standing in the shadows, and nobody knows who the character is. How would you like to help me bring that character to life?
Well, we could see what we could do. I haven't read that yet. I have a list, and you're on my list, because I do like all that Victoriana stuff. I love it.
And see, and I have all the research on Victorian England, too.
That's what has stopped me from writing anything with a Victorian twist. I'm in the middle of so many manuscripts right now, which, of course, you understand. Because
right.
My goal is to have 3 or 4 books next year for the readers. And I thought, I just need to get these books out I'm working on, and then I need to delve into more of the Victorian so I can make it authentic as I write it.
We are.
And then I would love to write a story.
I have everything on Victoria. Because before I even started The Hatter, I did 4 years' worth of research.
Oh, wow.
So I have
That's
books
amazing.
On. Yeah, I have books on. I have a map of Whitechapel and the east end of London, where the Ripper was, Whitechapel and Southwark and Blackmore Bridge and all that. So I have that old map that I ordered from England. I have books on clothing and furniture and lifestyles and food and all that stuff that was during that time period. So we're already ahead on the research.
That's amazing. I just actually, speaking of that, saw an hour-long documentary about Jack the Ripper, and they used computer generation to bring it to life, the buildings and the streets and the way it looked back then. Very intriguing and interesting.
It would be fun to bring the man out of the shadows.
Yes, it would. You have to let me get some things done, and then we can get together and see what we can do about that.
We would have a ball. But read The Hatter, because...
Oh, definitely. That's on my list. Have to have that book.
Yeah, you got to read The Hatter, and then get your things done, and then let's plan this for 2017.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah, I love that stuff, because I loved the title immediately, and I don't know if we ever even talked about it. I think I sent you a message at one point, The Mad Hatter, and I'm like, I might be one of the few present-day people who actually know what that means, where that came from.
Yes, you did.
Mad as a hatter.
Yep, you did. And see, and I researched all that stuff. That was what was so cool. I researched all that stuff before I even started the book, because I wanted it to be authentic. And someone like you, who understand the terminology, would understand why it was called The Mad Hatter.
Oh, I just love that. I thought that was just amazingly a brilliant idea for you to do that. Oh, I'm very intrigued to read this book. I can't wait.
Sometimes I have those flashes of brilliance.
we do.
As we do, yes. And in fact, we were just talking before the show that you and I both don't sleep much, because we're not only, as you say, pretty, but we're so highly intelligent that the brain just won't shut up.
Oh, we're so creative that just the brain won't shut up and let us sleep. And I know you know the experience. You're just going off into sleep, and the characters from whatever book you were writing before you went to bed just start like a movie. I don't know if it happens for you, but for me, it's like watching a movie.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm like, now I need to get up and write that down so I don't forget it. Oh, absolutely. And it keeps going like that.
Night before last, I was walking into the kitchen. And for some reason, I closed my eyes for just a moment. And I don't know what happened or where it came from, but I literally saw an upside-down staircase. Please tell me what that means.
Oh, I have no idea, but I'm intrigued by the thought. It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about a staircase that plays a part in one of the books I'm writing right now. See, we're on some weird wavelengths.
We are strangely connected, Frank.
Because my guy, actually, it's funny you say you walk into the kitchen. It's so hysterical, because Jacob, the character from the book I'm writing now called Ghost Lights, he walks into the kitchen of this they're brown stone houses, but the stones are white and they're kind of glittery. And he walks into the kitchen and he just sees this woman walking up at an angle in the air, like, you know.
That's the upside down staircase.
In the hell? And he finds out later at the neighbor's house, they still have the servant's staircase, but the one he's in doesn't have it. But the ghost is meandering up the servant's staircase, just like it was still there. Well, it's funny you say staircase. That's staircase.
We are now in the twilight zone, ladies and gentlemen. If you care to stay with us, beware.
Oh,
I love
twilight
it.
Zone. Yeah, I'm odd.
I'm telling you, in a past life, we had to have been connected somehow, somewhere, someplace.
Oh, I think so, absolutely, and I think it is gaslit Victorian England. Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I was probably burned as a witch at one point.
I think I've always just been the odd bastard I am now. I think, you know, because I like off kilter, weird. I'm the one who I'll be driving, and if there's a cemetery and I see a stone, I'll go in.
Me
like,
too.
You know, it's like a crow with a shiny object. Or if
yeah.
I see a building, I'll stop and look at it and take pictures. You know, just something off kilter strikes me, and I'm like a crow to something shiny, and by God,
and
that's
go
where
right
my attention
there. Oh,
goes
a
to.
Squirrel. Yeah, let's just step right now in the middle of the street. Excuse us, folks, we got to go see this.
Exactly. I believe that. It's because we're so creative. Our mind is always creating.
Because whenever we go to a different state, or when we were in one of the islands, there was a cemetery, an old cemetery. I said, I got to go there. Jack said, why? I said, honey, you know, I love cemeteries.
Oh,
when we were in New Orleans, I had to go to the cemetery. I didn't care about anything else. I wanted to go to the cemetery.
Yeah, I have a friend who wants to go to New Orleans because she's fascinated by Marie Laveau and all that. I said, I just want to go to the cemetery.
We were in Skagway, Alaska, our first cruise together. We were in Skagway, Alaska, and we're walking up the path because Skagway is the end of the, you know, before you crossed over into the Yukon, it was the end of the line before you got into the Yukon, so that's where they caught up on supplies and drank and messed around with the women before they went up into the netherworld. Well, on this pathway is an old cemetery, just where I spent my time.
Oh, I would have done the same thing.
We are strange. We are very
strange. We're not strange. We like that because I don't know if a lot of people realize, but it's on the engravings on stones and mausoleums and stuff that date back 200-300 years. That's not just artwork. That's telling you because the name and like birth date and death date, sometimes it's just the name and the death date, but there's pictures. That's telling you the story. Like people think, oh, it's cute. There's a skull that has like a bow on it. Well, that's telling you it's a child. It's a little girl child. And there's certain leaves that mean something. And I know you know all this stuff, but a lot of people look at that and go, oh, look what they did there. That's kind of cool. Well, no, they're telling the future what happened to this person.
It just
it's like a language of its own.
We lost my granddaughter last July. She was 13. Well, when we had the – I wish we had the old huge stones where you could just put – all kinds of stuff, but you have to lay them on the ground. They have to be bronze and all this happy horse shit.
You're
well,
right. They do all that weird stuff now.
Yeah, they don't appreciate cemeteries. But on her plate, her parents wanted four things. They wanted a heart because she had a huge heart. They wanted a motorcycle because she loved to ride motorcycles. They wanted the letter CHOA because it was Children's Health Care of Atlanta where she died, and they were very good to her. And they wanted, what was the fourth one? There was a fourth one. I can't remember what it was. Had a brain fart there. But those, and the heart wound up being a double heart because her heart was donated to a 12-year-old girl. So she still lives in someone
else. Fantastic.
So we have a granddaughter we've never met. That's the way we look at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but those four things on her stone tell a story.
Yes. Yes. And that's...
And you,
I would love to see people continue that.
Yes, because what happens is future generations go looking for family. There should be more on that stone than just the birth date and the death date. There should be, like you say, little artifacts that tell more about that person than they just were born and they died.
Right. And I like that. If you know that little language, it's like you're in on, I don't want to say you're in on the secret, but it's like you see more when you go in. It's not just a graveyard.
Right. It's a place of, to me, I enjoy going to graveyards because I'm comfortable among the dead. The dead don't scare me. It's the living that scare the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah, the living can be, yeah, it's the living that you don't know what they're going to do. You're not sure. You have to be a little afraid, a little wary.
Mm-hmm. The dead can't hurt me. If anything, they have been known to protect me.
Oh, I believe that. Absolutely.
I was driving home one night, and I had worked a lot of hours, and I was extremely, extremely tired, hadn't had any sleep, and I know that I closed my eyes for I don't know how long, but I felt this breath on the back of my neck, like somebody blew on the back of my neck, and then I smelled this sweet perfume.
Mm-hmm.
And I jerked my eyes open, and I knew who it was. It was my grandmother.
Oh, absolutely. Because I know, I believe 100% in that, because we talked about my fire on your last show and about me hearing literally the voice that said, no, just sit down and watch this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed awake, or I'd have been dead in the fire. So, I mean, absolutely, 100% sure.
So, yeah, they do walk among us.
I do believe they do, absolutely.
And I believe we have guardian angels, too. I believe that they probably are the spirits of our departed that are saying, hey, stupid, I can't come back, but I can kick your butt and make sure you stay on the straight and narrow, but you got to listen to me.
Absolutely. And that's the key. You have to listen. Because people always say, well, I have an intuition. I don't know if it's so much that as we've all been in a position where the first thought that comes in our head, we ignore it and we go with something else. If you'd listened to the first thought, you'd gotten what you wanted.
That's true. And we second guess ourselves because we don't trust our instincts. I learned a long time ago, if you have any doubt, don't. I've missed being killed many a time because I decided not to go somewhere at the last minute and something happened on the road. So, yeah,
absolutely.
People, if you hear that little voice in your head, pay attention to it. And that brings me to this.
I agree.
Go ahead.
No, I just was going to say I agree. Cause I don't know if we said this last time I was on, but I have a story like that. I had to call off work, and I don't call off work. I couldn't find my car keys. To that day, you know, even till the day before the fire, even cleaning out the house after the fire, never found these car keys in like 15 years. Had to call off work. My car keys were always in the bowl on the table by the door. My whole thing of keys was gone. Had to call off work, and I just thought to myself, I wonder if that was to protect me. And people said, but there wasn't any accident that day. I said, but you don't understand. I might not have been the cause of the accident. I could have been going through a green light. Someone could have ran a red light and hit me. And, you know, and if I wasn't there, there wouldn't be an accident. And I often wondered about that. Were my keys just taken to disappear? Actually, I live alone, Yvonne. You know that. Who would have taken my keys?
Your guardian angel.
Oh, I think so, 100%. I just wish they'd have... brought them back. Because,
I know, you had to get more keys.
They're hard to replace.
But there's a thing on your blog, I mean on your website, that I missed the last time around, and I want to read it this time around because it is so, so true, and the more I read it, the more it makes sense to me, and it's pertinent to our civilization, and that is, it's by L. Ron Hubbard. The artist interjects the spirit of life into a culture. A culture is only as great as its dreams, and its dreams are dreamed by artists. How true is that?
Oh, that's very true. You have to stop and think. Even at the dawn of civilization, well, even before we had our quote-unquote civilization, what did we have? We had the artists. Granted, it was oral stories because, you know, they might not have had writing. Or people must say, the cave paintings, that's literally an artist. I said, but is that just a cave painting? Because they might not have had ABC. Is that just a cave painting, or is that their way of telling you their story?
Exactly.
So I think the ultimate foundation of any civilization is art. Whether your art is painting, writing, singing, whether you are a geometric person who uses mathematics, you can be literally an accountant and be an artist if you use those numbers in an artful way.
Because numbers are art, and art is numbers.
Absolutely.
When we write, we use numbers. People go, what?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, we use numbers because we number our pages. We number our story.
Mm-hmm.
We use numbers.
And if you talk to people who have read my books, and if they get it, there is actually almost there is a certain cadence to the way I write, not just in dialogue, but in just a paragraph of description. I try to do a specific cadence, almost. I don't want to say like a lyrical lullaby type of thing, but that's what it is. Because no one wants to read an Arctic cold sentence. He went to the car. You know, they want to get you lulled into a cadence, a syllabic, a certain number of syllables. Oh, yeah, it's all mathematics. Everything's built on mathematics.
And if you get in that cadence, then you get literally into the book. You become
you literally get into the character in
the book.
Yes.
People don't read that way anymore.
No, they don't. And I think a lot of times this is kind of maybe a telltale symbol of me. I have found people who have said, and I tried to write Raven House as not as a Victorian or English ghost story, but like as my interpretation of one. But I have had people come up to me about Into the Mirror Black and Raven House. They're like, you write these ghost stories and they remind me of like M.R. James. And they remind me of, you know, English writers who wrote ghost stories. And I said, well, thank you. And I think subconsciously I've been affected by my love of Welsh and Scottish and English ghost stories, that it comes right out in my writing. And those are all lyrically done.
Which brings me to something else we discussed before the show, and the fact that you would love to find a small country, be it Scotland or Wales or Ireland or some little off-the-wall island.
Denmark.
That
oh, yeah.
would buy
I
your
love Denmark.
Books and just blow up their country with your books, so you could go over there and say, here I am, let me sign your book, let's sell some more books. So that's his goal.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen. This show is now heard literally all over the world. We have listeners in India, United Arab Emirates, Germany, the Philippines, where else? Some little New Guinea. There's other places. I mean, literally all over the world, the show is heard now. So there's
I think that's phenomenal.
I think it is too. And it's because of y'all. It's not about me. It's because of all of y'all.
Odd people like me that people seem to like. I love it because you give us an outlet.
You're odd, I'm odd.
One of those little countries that I would love to be embraced country, like you said, Scotland, Wales, Denmark, because that would give me the opportunity, because those countries embrace the little ghost stories I write. I'm not out to change the world. I don't think I bring a fresh new story. I just write what I think other people would like to read, because I think it's what I know it's what I would like to read. And I would like to have a little country like Scotland, Wales, or Denmark where my books just sell hugely, and it would give me the opportunity to go over there and meet the people and see the culture, experience the culture. And, but by the same token, it would allow me to come home and still be semi-private.
Well, you know, when you get that famous, your privacy is done. It's over.
Yeah, but if it's
See,
if
I'm sorry,
famous,
but you got to sacrifice privacy for fame. It's just the way it is.
If I'm famous in a foreign little country and I come home, I might not be so famous, and that would be okay with me.
Oh, no, you would trust me. Would be. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you something about this man that we didn't talk about the last time that I found out, because I know how to find out these things.
Oh,
and, what I found out about this young man, who's also pretty,
it's
he
very
is
pretty.
A trained, you're welcome, he is a trained cosmetologist who knows how to paint. Now, explain that to me, because
and
my
I know
visual, my visual of that is just almost obscene.
I'm a trained cosmetologist who knows how to paint. Is that what you said?
Uh-huh.
I have no idea what that means. Is that off my website?
That's off your website. That is off your website.
About...
I'm going. If he okay, now he's got some explaining to do, Lucy.
I don't know what I meant by that. No, I do. Well, I was trained. I know how to do hair and makeup, so I can send you out looking real pretty.
Well, see,
and I thought,
now,
you know, that's real. Well. It helps me, and I'll tell you how it helps me, because I am very tactile. Don't tell me anything, show me. Because I needed, in ghost lights, this gentleman walks into this house that's having an open house, and he goes upstairs. And he sees this elderly woman who's passed away has these two collections. And it's a little bit about, like, Victorian mourning jewelry and the tear catcher containers and all the – I have to have this stuff. So I bought a replica of, like, a pair of black jeweled earrings, like a Victorian upper crust lady would have worn in her mourning. You know, I have to have stuff like that. So the being the cosmetologist and be able to do the makeup and stuff, that helps me, because if I need to describe somebody, say she has red hair and I want it to be a certain way, I can get a wig. I can put it on a mannequin head. I can, if it's human hair, I can color it to the color I want. Or I can just buy the red wig, put it on the mannequin head, I can cut it, and then... if she's going to be going somewhere, she puts her hair up, I can put her hair up, and then I can describe it in the story. I don't have to picture it because I have it. If I want her to have her makeup done a certain way, I can do that on the mannequin head, so I don't have to picture it in my head. I actually have the physical thing here. Or I can get a friend over, because I have friends who let me do this for them. Let me paint them up and then take a picture or what have you. Oh, it's amazing. It helps amazingly.
It does.
It really does. It's like clothing. I'll go buy clothes, put them on so I can describe them. I'm weird that way, and it really makes my day when someone comes up to me and says, like after they read Into the Mirror Black. Of course, some people were like, you described the house too much. But most of the people come up to me and say, you described the house, you described those people. I could close my eyes and I could picture them. And I said, that's good, because when I see this, I see it as a movie. I see it as live people, as a real house. It's real things I'm describing to you. And that means the world, that people can read it and picture it.
And
that
is why I bought the map of the East End of London in 1888. So when you go and you read the Mad Hatter, the streets and the alleyways and the location of the hat factory are all real places.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. And if you do that, then you can fudge it a little bit and you can put something there. or you can make a street of your own and fit it right in to where it is. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
In fact, there was a hat factory in Southwark on the Thames River, but it was there later. I just recreated it in that time period because it fit my story.
Yes, that's what's called fictional license or artistic license.
Right, but the historical facts are correct. The streets, the alleyways, the businesses, the crimes that were committed in 1888.
See, I'm one of these people, and I know I'm going to get crucified by, like, the Ripperologists out there. I'm one of these people who I think several of the bodies that turned up before his canonical victims, I think several of those could be are attributed to him as well. Now, I don't know if he stopped in England because, yes, he hopped a ship and it took 3 months to get here and he started killing in America. But there are several killings here in America that start on the East Coast and go out west that are very Ripper-esque.
And so
I think, you know, we'll never know. But I don't see why not.
Well, anything is possible because all of a sudden they stopped.
Right.
And
I don't think they just started with the canonical victims. I think he got a few that are not quite attributed to him before that.
I agree with you because as we know now in serial killers was one of my studies when I was studying criminal justice. And as we know now, they do. They evolve. They practice before they get it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more they evolve, the more maniacal they get.
And I understand what you're saying because they don't call it this anymore, but they used to, when you were going for a degree in psychology, I was originally pursuing psychology, there were courses that were called abnormal. They were called literally deviant. In the title of courses, they don't call them that anymore. But what they focused on, they were focusing on the sexual killers, the sadists, the Jack the Ripper type murderers, and things like that. So I agree with you. He didn't just step out of his house one day fully evolved. And people say, well, he wasn't fully evolved with the first canonical victim. If you look to see it, he was pretty far evolved with the first canonical victim. I think there were several before that, absolutely.
They were practice victims because they could.
Oh, absolutely, and I think he actually probably would have started with, well, usually they say if he's trying to kill a woman who's an alcoholic, blah, 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 say it was his mother, they don't normally start with the actual victim. These are substitutes. I said he probably started with someone closer to home that wasn't, maybe it actually was perhaps a lady of the evening he literally knew. He fit
because during that time in history, that was a quote-unquote accepted form of employment because a lot of women were left by their husbands or significant others and are thrown out of the factories for
because
whatever reason and they became alcoholics. And,
they
and
didn't have rights.
Right.
If your husband died and you didn't have a male child to inherit the property could go to his brother, it would go to his next living relative, and they could come in and throw your ass out on the street and you had absolutely zero recourse. You had no rights. This was a time period when they don't have telephones, but someone couldn't drop a dime on you. They couldn't call the police and say he's over there beating his wife because the bobbies would say, we don't get involved in domestic issues.
Because it's his right as a man to do as he pleases.
Exactly. And thank God we've come further than that. But absolutely, I agree with you.
And of course,
you get off
children
on all these
suffered.
Tangents.
Because if mama's out
horribly.
If mama's out prostituting to get enough for ale and a slice of bread, the kids, even little ones, 6 months old or so, are left alone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or dropped off. Because I'm not familiar whether or not they had too many workhouses or poorhouses in that time period.
They did.
I know they had them, but I didn't know if they had them to the availability they did later on.
Yeah, they had them, a lot of them on the East End, and of course, when you have four or five people sleeping in the same bed, and
right.
some of the workhouses wouldn't take the children, and
right.
some of the workhouses wouldn't take married couples, so you
right.
farmed everybody out.
Right, and sometimes you never saw your kids again.
Exactly, because they either died or they took to the streets and became pickpockets and thieves and however
mm-hmm.
else they could manage. Street urchins, they were called street urchins.
Right, absolutely. It's amazing.
So, yeah, we got to do this book. Okay, it's your fault now, Frank. The damn characters are dancing around. They're
you
dancing
might not
and
need
sick.
Any. You might not need any help. They'll be dancing in your head, and you'll have a sequel before you know it.
No, this will be fun. Let's talk about I know we talked a little bit about.
Did I answer your question? Was that that was in a roundabout way? Did I answer your question about the cosmetology and makeup?
Yes, you did. It was a perfect
okay.
answer because I understand where you're coming from. In the Pink Canary. My description of Penelope was taken from a photograph of a friend of mine who was dressed in drag.
See, there you know exactly what I mean.
Yes, I do. It makes perfect sense to me. A cosmetologist who can paint. So, see, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go, before we go to talk about Ravenhouse, remember what I read to you earlier. The artist interjects the spirit of life into a culture. A culture is only as great as its dreams, and its dreams are dreamed by artists. So, like I say every time on this show, if you have a dream, become part of the culture, because only artists make those dreams come true. I don't care if it's a business. I don't care if it's a passion. It's still a form of art.
It truly is. And there's nothing going to happen. Now, you got to be sensible. Don't sell everything you own and try to launch it into a business. Be sensible. Keep your shelter. Keep an income. You know what I mean? But you have to
uh-huh.
pursue your dream. Pursue your passion in one way or another. Because the worst thing that's ever going to happen is someone's going to tell you no. But you know what? Other people might tell you yes. And, like, I don't sell like Dean Koontz. I don't sell like J.K. Rowling. But you know what? I'm selling more and more
exactly.
every year, and I'm having a good time.
And you get to come on this show, and we get to have a blast and find out we
show.
Were together
Absolutely.
In Victorian England.
Exactly.
Of all places. Let's talk, before we go to Ravenhouse, I just, like, y'all know this show's not scripted, but I have notes, and sometimes we follow the notes and sometimes we don't. But there's something on my note we didn't touch on last time either. What is a thoughtful Scientologist?
A thoughtful Scientologist? We discussed before the show how we are caregivers, and
uh-huh.
I try to be a very thoughtful person, because our whole goal is to make a better world. Our whole goal is to help as many people as we can. And I try, when I say thoughtful, to make that a part of me where I don't have to think about it, where it's part of my everyday practice, whether it be helping that woman bring herself out of the store, even though I don't know her, whether it be someone needs to have a lift to go to the store. Can I do that? Yes, I can do that for you. To just because you don't know. The tiniest thing, it's like the butterfly effect. The tiniest thing you do that's good might be the only good that person had that day. It might be the only good that person had that week. And it could, that tiny, tiny, what seems inconsequential to you, you're doing nothing more but there's then. Instead of going right into the building, there's a woman 10 steps behind you, and you wait 5 seconds, hold the door for you. Whether or not she thanks you, that's a kindness you've put out into the universe that will come back to you. And whether or not she thanks you, that might be the only kind thing someone has done for her lately, and that might turn her around from the negative direction she's going in.
Without her even realizing it.
Without her even realizing it.
I like your philosophy.
People have heard me say before, I never want to do anything. I never want to say anything. I never wanted anything to hurt anybody's feelings, to make anybody feel less than. My whole goal, I have always said before, why do there have to be cliques in the artistic world where you're not part of our clique? We're not going to write articles about you. We're not going to help you with you. Why can't it be? Because if I make it big, first thing I'm going to do is turn around and hold my hand out for my friends and go, hey, I have a book signing. And people who have gone with me to book signings and charity events I've hosted will tell you, I'm the first person who will say, I'm going to do a book signing at so-and-so place on this day. Do you want to come?
Uh-huh.
We'll see if they can get your books. I'm the first person to do that. Why can't we all help? Could you imagine
what a better world
this would be?
How huge. I don't think that we could find a hall big enough. If one person tells another person who tells another person, there's not a hall big enough.
Exactly.
And it would have to go on for a week.
Absolutely. If you look back on my book signings, I haven't done any for several years with, you know, brick-and-mortar stores closing and blah, blah, blah. But if you look back on my history of book signing events, you're not going to find, and I'm not bragging, I'm giving you an example. I don't believe in bragging, like before we talked about the show. I don't like to talk too much about what I do because I don't do it for notoriety or recognition. I do it because
right.
You just should. But if you look back, I have not done any book signings that were not part of a charity event because I feel if you can do something to help, you should.
I agree. I certainly agree, because it comes back tenfold.
Oh, it just, there's no limit to how it comes back to you, whether it just be a good feeling or someone invites you to go along somewhere or you get invited back. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just like this show. This show has helped my guests so much. I am proud of this show because of what it's done for the people that I brought on the show. A children's author got a phone call from two brick-and-mortar stores wanting her books, her children's books, in their stores for Christmas.
That's fantastic.
Paul Hurd got a call from two automotive magazines that he used to be involved with that want his articles and his name and their magazines again.
Oh, that's fantastic. See, I love it. You're giving back. You're helping. And you don't have to.
But it's fun.
It absolutely is. And that's what I'm saying. If you start that chain reaction, if you start that train, you don't know where we're going to be able to go. Because if you have two people, you've split the workload. You've split for 50%. If you have four people, it's each 25%. If you have 100 people, you're each only doing 1%. You can pour your 100% into that 1%. And your next person can pour their 100% into their 1%. My God, what could you achieve?
And think of it this way. This thing started out last July. July the 29th was our first show. And we are booked into April, and we have our guests coming back because our guests begin to get a following on this show, and there is no telling where all these wonderful people that have been guests on this show will, what things will happen for them.
Absolutely. It absolutely. I don't talk money. I don't talk religion because those are very private things to me. But because you asked me about a thoughtful Scientologist, and I just, one of my favorite books to read is Scientology, The Fundamentals of Thought, and I read it at least once a year because it just shows you, it just gives you that basically fundamental of thought where you can be, because you know the old adage, how I'm just one person. What can I do? How can I fix it? How can I help? How can I? Harriet Tubman was one person.
The change begins with me.
Harriet Tubman did. It begins with one person, and you can have that butterfly effect. If someone in front of you, someone at the grocery store, I've paid because they didn't have a dollar extra, and I didn't want them to have to put something back because they might be the richest person in the world. It doesn't matter because they might be a person working as hard as they can. They might need that food for themselves and their family, and they're a dollar short. And in addition to the embarrassment, now they have to stand there and make the choice of what's their family not going to eat. And if I have that dollar or that $5, they're more than welcome to it because I know the universe is going to give back to me because in my fundamentals of thought, I'm putting out this wonderful energy because I want to, because I can, and it's going to come back to me, and it's going to help that person.
And you get replenished in many different ways.
The
wheel always turns, and it's like I've always told my children, what goes around always comes around, good, bad, or indifferent. It always comes back around.
Yes.
So, ladies and gentlemen, be careful how you turn that wheel.
Be careful, because what you put out is what you get back, because I'm also one of the, axioms or what have you of my belief. You attract to you, whether it be negative or positive, and people go, oh, come on, how did I attract this happening to me? You might not have been you might not think you were the cause of it. Now, I'm not talking about illness or anything like that. You know what I'm talking about.
Right.
I'm talking, there's a cause and effect.
Everything.
Yes, you might be having a piss-poor attitude. You might be very negative of that job, and you're making people who are coming in contact with you uncomfortable. And negative does spread. If someone has a negative experience with you, say if you're a checker, and they go through your line and they have a negative, you cut down their happiness a little bit. You cut down their tone a little bit by acting like that because they have to come down to your level to engage with you. And it might not be easy to get back up once they leave your proximity.
And we've talked about this before, that everybody we meet, stranger, friend, family, foe, it doesn't matter. Everybody that we meet, we leave a part of ourselves with that person, and we bring a part of them with us. So if we leave them with a negative feeling when we depart being with them, they're going to take that negative with them, and they're going to impart it to someone else.
Right.
So it's just as easy to take a moment and impart a piece of positive, because the next person in line or the next person they run across, that positive can't help but come out.
Well, see, I have this memorized. L. Ron Hubbard wrote it. It's called The Joy of Creating. And he says, force yourself to smile, and you'll soon stop frowning. Force yourself to laugh, and you'll soon find something to laugh about. Wax enthusiastic, and you'll very soon feel so. A being causes his own feelings. The greatest joy there is in life is creating. Splurge on it. And you know that's true. You know yourself that's true. Laughter is the best medicine. Where do you think that comes from? Because if you force yourself to laugh, it soon becomes a real laugh, and it's releasing endorphins. You don't need an antidepressant.
It really works,
ladies
and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you, it really, really works. Because it does. The endorphins release, and then all of a sudden your body feels lighter, your mind feels lighter, your head feels lighter, your soul feels lighter.
Yes, and that's, basically, if you force yourself to smile when you don't want to smile, soon that smile is not forced. And soon that smile is going to be followed by laughter. And it's going to lift you. It's going to increase your tone. It's going to move you up. And
then you're going to go around killing people with a smile.
That's right. But what a better way to do it.
I'm telling you. I'm sorry. I'm going to kill you. Only in my imagination, people. Only in my imagination.
Exactly.
But I'm twisted.
Well, like I said, smiling is contagious. If you're smiling, someone else will smile.
There you go. Now, before we run out of time, because we always run out of time, I want you to tell the people yes, I know it's getting that time.
And we never talked about Ravenhouse again. Damn it.
Wait, no, we're getting there. Let's talk about Ravenhouse. Tell the folks about Ravenhouse.
Ravenhouse is my little homage to the English, you know, the ghost stories in Europe I love so much. It's kind of claustrophobic. There's not a huge cast of characters. He finds this little rundown, forgotten, out-of-the-way house, buys it. He starts fixing it up, is moving in so he can fix it up more, and there's a ghost in it, and she's sometimes a nice, and sometimes she's a little enraged, and as you read the book and find out what happened to her, you start realizing why after death she started to become insane. And it's kind of, I've gotten some good reviews. Some people didn't like it, and that's okay, because not everybody has to like it. But it did very well. I hope it keeps going. I hope Ravenhouse keeps going, because the people who have liked it and I've got such great feedback from, and like I said, I had several people tell me, hey, this reminds me of an English ghost story. A buddy of mine, he's Welsh, and he's like, yeah, I read this. I can see this. This is like something from over here. I'm like, that's great. That's high compliment. I hope people read my Ravenhouse, and I hope they enjoy it.
What I need for you to do now is to tell folks where you can be found.
I can be found. You can be finding me by just typing in my name, Frankie Bittinger, at Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. I have an author page and I have my personal page. I also have a website, www.frankiebittinger.com. I go there once in a while and write a blog entry. I can be found all over. Please find me. Please friend me. Share about my books.
Because he's a lot of fun, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you, he's a
hoot and a half. I'm a lot of fun, and I use my money from my royalties to help animals in need. That's where most of it goes. I use some of it to take courses, extension courses. So I encourage people, because people I enjoy the fact I have a cult following, because I feel they're true readers, they'll stick with you, and they help spread the word. So please help spread the word, because look at how much you're helping by taking 5 seconds to share and tell people to buy this book.
You are working on something else, correct?
I am working on several other things, several books. I can't tell you anything about some of them, because they might not be under my name. They might have a whole new personality.
The personality is not going to come out now, right?
No. I am working on a book that I hope to be the first of three. Right now the title is By Gaslight, and it's the first of what I hope is three collections of my very early short stories. When I started out, we talked last time, I started out, before I wrote my first book, by writing short stories to delve into my world. And I have enough to do three volumes.
Wow.
And also, I also hope to have the middle book in what I call a somewhat trilogy out next year. It's called Ghost Lights. There will be a prequel and a sequel to it if all goes well. But Ghost Lights is another haunted house book, because of my books so far, of the five books I've written, the books that have gotten the most attention and sales are Into the Mirror Black and Ravenhouse. And they are ghost haunted house stories. And I think people like those. And they're my favorite. So I'm going to continue in that vein.
So then you need to do a haunted cemetery.
There's a weird little cemetery we might see again in Ravenhouse, because I tell you in the author's note at the end of Ravenhouse, because it's a short book, it's like 200 some pages, it's only like 63,000 words, I tell you, you might see these people again, because although there's no threads hanging, there's intriguing, interesting nuances, aspects in Ravenhouse we might have to revisit again. and that by revisiting them, it might be a book of their own. They might also turn up in another book. Just everything of mine seems, everything of mine is interconnected, and I'm not doing it on purpose. It just ends up that way, if you know what I mean. It's like all
I
in
do.
The same universe.
I understand explicitly because I have a couple of books that way myself. I don't know where they came from. They just popped in there and said, I'm going to be in this book and you can't stop me. Okay.
They do.
They
make
do.
A reference to a town, or they'll make a reference, or somebody will pop up and it's like, what?
You weren't supposed
cool.
to be here. Go back to sleep. And they won't shut up.
And they won't, but that's okay because we love them. So, yeah, my goal is to have a short story collection next year, a haunted house novel, and you might see someone else I know come out with a book or two in the next year or two. So I'll have to let you know about that. You might meet that person eventually.
Oh, Lord, here we go. So when I set you up again, I don't know if I'm going to be talking to my friend Frank or an alternate ego. This should be fun.
Hey, wouldn't that be fun?
Layla might have
again.
To come out that night, too, and play. Oh, good heavens.
There you
and you
go.
Are coming. That would be so much fun. You are coming
you
back.
You have her, you and Layla, and me and the other one. There are all four of us on a radio show. We'd need about two, 3 hours for that one.
We would, but it would be fun. No, Layla, you can't come out and play tonight. I'm going to bring you back as
yes,
a regular guest.
Yes, please. As much as you want.
That's what I do. I'm thinking, are you going to have anything ready, say, by May that we can talk about?
I don't think so. I was shooting to have a Christmas book, a haunted house book, and my short story collection out this year. So I don't think I'm going to have anything by May because you know how it is. I have a graphic designer doing a cover. I have an editor helping me with the edits and all the formatting. Plus, I work full-time and have a full taking care of animals and all that stuff after working.
I'll just
so
bring you back in May anyway, and we'll just talk about
anything.
Yeah,
bring me back in May anyway, and bring me back in May and bring me back in October, and we'll be good. I wanted to come back before Christmas this year because I redid my paperback of A Christmas Canticle, but you didn't have any openings, so I couldn't promote
I'm
A Christmas
sorry.
Canticle. So we'll promote
I'm sorry.
It next year. What's the
yes.
new Christmas
I'm going to put you down for December. You're my first for December.
There you go. So give me April, give me May, give me December, and then if you have any openings in between it, May and December, I'd like to come back again.
I got you May, October, and December. That's
okay.
just the beginning.
But, yeah, please, I'm not writing anything down because I'm laying all covered up on the couch, and I'm nice and warm, so I'm not writing anything down, so you'll keep me
Well,
informed.
I got it written down, so I'll do the thinking for both of us.
There you go. You won't let me forget.
No, no, no. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, I mean not tomorrow night, Wednesday night, January the 11th, we will have a new guest on the show called, his name is Carlos Colon, and he is another author. It is his debut being on the show, is his debut appearance. I'm losing my voice, I don't know where it's going. Layla thinks she wants to play. And then on January the 12th, I have author Ann Goldfarb. Ann, bless her heart, was supposed to have been on the show during Hurricane Matthew, so this is also her debut appearance on the show. Frank, thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
For coming and spending time with me. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to read this one more time. The artist interjects the spirit of life into a culture. A culture is only as great as its dreams, and its dreams are dreamed by artists.
That really struck a chord with you, didn't it?
Understand this. If you have a dream and you do not make that dream real, even if the dream takes a detour and it becomes another dream, it's still a dream that you're making real, whether it's a business, whether it's a piece of artwork, whether it's a piece of writing, whether it's a piece of music, whether it's a passion, it's your dream. That makes you an artist. That makes you part of the culture. That makes you part of the universe. So make that dream real. Keep that in mind. Join us next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern. And, yes, Frank will be back. He'll be back in May.
Yes.
And until then, and Frank, just hang on a minute when the show goes dark.
Absolutely.
Until next Wednesday night, I wish you love, peace, and happiness. Okay, we are off the air, but anything we say now will show up in archives. And you know I'm gonna tag you in the link in the archives when
yes,
it downloads. And then I will tag you on all the uploads I do to other podcasts. So put it on your blog, put it everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. I did that last time. Absolutely.
And I'm sure you got results from the show, too.
I think I did.
That's
yes,
what
absolutely.
It's all about. So,
wow,
my dear.
Just imagine.
Thank
we're gonna
you.
Be, we're
so
going to be millionaires. Thank you. I love doing it. Yes, so we'll be at least that three times next year, so that's perfect and fantastic.
If not more. Who knows where this is going to go?
I'll be your monthly.
Well, it could happen. It probably
oh,
could happen. We could have fun with this once a month and still never run out of stuff to talk about.
Oh, my God, I know, because we just like to talk so much. We have too much in common.
Yeah, and we didn't even... We were going to revisit the Egyptian history that we both are so enamored with, and we didn't even hit that.
I forgot about Stay.
Didn't hit Poe. Didn't hit a lot of things. So, yeah, we got plenty to talk about.
Oh, exactly. We can do many shows.
Yes. So until next time, my friend, thank you.
Thank you very much, honey, and I will talk with you soon.
All right, darling. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Good night.